Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Vecchio, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or you can even support the podcast on patreon.com/fisheriespodcast. My guest today is Christina Carter. Christina is currently a fisheries biologist in the U.S. Virgin Islands, where she's sampling many of the important fisheries species of the islands. She says she loves her job because not only is she on a tropical island surrounded by beautiful blue water, but she gets to work on projects that have a positive impact on the populations of fish, while also helping the people of the island fish for their livelihood. She's adopted and grew up in a military family, but has always lived near a body of water and had sailboats. She even lived on a sailboat for a whole year with her family right after high school, completing 2 transatlantic voyages. She earned a bachelor's degree in biological oceanography at Old Dominion University and a master's in fisheries and aquatic sciences at University of Florida. She's worked for the state of North Carolina and for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in several locations throughout her career. She says she absolutely doesn't ever want to do anything else for a living but work in fisheries. And I think I relate to that. Welcome to the podcast, Christina. I'm so excited to get to chat with you. You've definitely reinvigorated my love of the field of fisheries with your amazing enthusiasm. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get into talking about your current work and some of the things that have led you to where you are, because I think it seems like you've just had an amazing journey so far, and I'm so excited to hear about it. You're currently a fisheries biologist with the government of the U.S. Virgin Islands. What island do you live on?
I live on St. Croix, the largest island of the 3 making up the U.S. Virgin Islands.
I think that a lot of people would be a little bit nervous about living in the Virgin Islands through hurricane season. Have you been through a hurricane season there yet?
You know, I have not. I am pretty new to this position. I was just hired in March, actually, and I literally had 1 month to get all my things in order and then move here. I have not yet been in a hurricane season, but luckily, you know, I have a lot of new friends on the island who have been through multiple hurricane seasons. They'll help me to feel safe and prepared, and we'll just, you know, hunker down and do our best to get through it. It's not the same up in Virginia, because that's where I grew up, but we've had some really gnarly ones hit us up there. I mean, we're all in this together, so...
Definitely.
And it doesn't discriminate.
No, that's true. Hopefully that dust will keep it down for the,
let's
the summer. Yeah. We don't need that on top of everything else right now.
No. I mean, we had 3 straight days of Sahara dust and you can't see very far. So, yeah. Right. It was interesting. I never experienced that before.
So you're pretty new to your position, but it sounds like you're going to be working in all aspects of fisheries science at this job. Can you describe a typical day in the office?
Yeah, sure. So right now, a typical day in the office for me is just really trying to get all of the gears and equipment that we need to get our sampling done for the next year. So I'm mainly working on one project at the moment that's looking into queen conch and Caribbean spiny lobster. So that's going to be starting up here soon. That's mostly the main day. I'm also working on other documents for like boating access and helping the fishers of the Virgin Islands get the aid that was awarded to them by the hurricane disaster relief for the 2017 hurricanes Irma and Maria. We're working with fishers right now mostly. Everything else is just kind of meetings. And I'm also working on something called Reef Responsible. And we're getting ready to have a relaunch of that, which is really cool. So that's exciting. I'm really excited for that to be out and available for everybody.
So you said some of the major fisheries that you are keeping track of right now are queen conch and lobster.
Yes. So queen conch and Caribbean spiny lobster are 2 of the biggest fisheries here in the Virgin Islands. So I think spiny lobster is 1 and then it's queen conch. So we have to really be on top of managing the fisheries just because it is the largest.
And do you do sampling of those species?
Yes, we will be. I'm working on the project that I will be sampling for queen conch and measuring them and, you know, detailing when I see them, where I see them at certain locations, getting a lot of biological data from them. And then I'll also be doing the same for the spiny lobster.
How do you sample queen conch?
We dive for them. So we're basically going to dive down to the bottom substrate, and then for 500 meters, we'll be going along this transect. So we'll be going along this transect, we'll be looking for queen conch, and, you know, whenever we find one, we stop and we take the biological data, and then we just keep moving, and we have a GPS and everything, and figure out where they are, get the data we need, and keep moving forward.
Do you use traps for the lobster, or is that also a diving project?
It's also a diving project. We will be using lobster snares, like the hook, and you pull it to catch them. Mm-hmm. So we'll be using the lobster snares, and we'll get the lobster, and there's only like a sample amount that we take because we will be aging them as well. To age them, you have to get their gastric ossicles, which is in their tail. So we'll be taking a sample size of those and taking them back to an aging lab.
How long have you been a scuba diver?
I got my diving certificate back in 2010, so about 10 years. But the first time I ever dove was actually with my family when we were in Souffre on the island of St. Lucia. And I did like a discovery dive, and I was 18 years old. This was my first time diving. And let me tell you, it was love at first dive. I thought God should have made me a mermaid. Like, I still believe that. Like, what's up? Like, I want to be in the water all the time. It's a completely different world down there. And it just made me feel incredible. And I just loved every minute of it. And it's just so beautiful, and you're just a visitor down there, and it's just amazing. And one thing that you'll find on the island is that you don't have regular windows. So my windows are literally just hurricane shutters and screens. So I'm really excited to be down here in the Caribbean where it's warm, and I can wear like a 3 mil suit and be happy and comfortable for, you know, 45 minutes. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. So this is your first job using diving as a tool for research.
Correct. Which is really exciting. I'm very, very excited about it.
Yeah. It's fun. I've never actually had my own projects that involve diving, but I've been a research assistant with several other projects that involve diving. A really good thing to do while you're underwater, I think.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it once we get everything sorted for our sampling season.
So is your field work concentrated near one of the islands, or do you span all of the islands of the USVI?
So we have districts. I'm in the St. Croix district, so I will only be doing my research and work on the island of St. Croix, unless they need help over at St. Thomas and vice versa. So St. Thomas is the district of St. Thomas and St. John. So they have both those islands. So they'll do their work for both of those islands.
They're quite far apart.
St. Croix and then St. Thomas and St. John. Like St. Thomas and St. John are like much closer. No, we're quite south from them.
And there's not a lot of people that live on St. John, right?
Correct. Yes. They have a very small population.
So a lot of people feel like they wouldn't be able to handle living on an island, but you seem pretty enthusiastic about it. What do you like best about living on St. Croix?
I personally like a simpler life. You know, you've got the beach and the water and the culture here. And also, like, I have a small home and I don't have a lot of possessions, and it's just like quiet and nice and chill. It's a small community. And everybody pretty much knows everybody, which could be good and bad, but, you know, I'm going to look at it as good. Now, you won't find your normal creature comforts here. We only have so many stores and grocery stores or large stores like Kmart And we're not going to have like a Walmart or Target. We're not going to have like Chick-fil-A or whatever, you know, other fast food. And to get items here, they are going to be a little bit more expensive because, you know, it costs shipping to get things down here. And there's not, you know, some of the stores aren't always going to have what you need in stock. So that's just like something that you have to navigate. But if you aren't worried about those things, living on an island it is paradise. It's very comfortable. It's relaxing. It's not necessarily stress-free. I won't say that because, you know, I'm working, but you know, there's some things, but I would say that it's a much more relaxing environment. It's just really chill and cool. And I like to walk down my road. I'll just start walking and see where I end up. And it's always a beautiful scenery. And there's only so many places you can go. Like you literally go from West End to East End and it's about an hour and a half. And you can see so many different types of landscape going on. I mean, we've got hills here that look a little more like mountains, but they're not as big as mountains. You can drive up those and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And we also have Point Udall, which is the easternmost point of the United States. But yeah, it's just more like you won't necessarily have everything that you have in the States, but you can always adapt to it. You can always just realize that maybe you should get more things from the community, like at the farmer's market or things like that to support the community. And it just becomes, I don't know, it just becomes something special.
I've lived on a few islands and I really, really love it. But I know that other people have had a really hard time with it.
Yeah, no, I grew up in a small town, so I'm good with a small town feel. Like, I don't really like big cities. I've also been around so many different places that moving to an island wasn't as bad because I've already been so transient. Even in my last job, like, we lived at a hotel, so I just got used to not having much, you know?
Yeah. And you've been moving around, you said, since you were a kid, yeah?
For the most part, I mean, my family ended up settling in Virginia, so we didn't really move much after my third grade year. We just kind of stayed in the Virginia area. Once I got into fisheries, I started moving all over the place. I went to so many different states, and then I became more of a traveler, and I started traveling places.
Yeah. What's your favorite place that you've traveled?
Ooh, okay. Overall, I would say my favorite place that I've ever been to was the island of Faial in the Azores, which is an island chain west of Portugal, and it's a Portuguese island chain. That island was absolutely beautiful. You can see 30 feet down into the water. It was just beautiful, and they had volcanic beaches, so like all the sand was black, and I don't know, it was just something else. Like when you got there, this is when we had it, you know, sailed across, and we had brought our boat there, and you get to the marina, and you just see these walls of paintings and pictures that people have put on, because there was this thing where if you didn't put your picture of your boat on this wall, if you didn't paint it there, if you didn't draw it there, it would be bad luck. We also put our little painting on there of us in our boat, and it was just part of this long mural. I mean, it spanned the entire marina. It was absolutely beautiful. And it was just so small and quaint, slow down, you know?
So this was part of your year living aboard a sailboat with your family?
Yeah. So from 2005 to 2006, the four of us, we got a couple of our friends to help us on the first leg of it, but we took our sailboat from Virginia to Bermuda, and then Bermuda to Azores to Portugal, Portugal to Spain. We went down to Gibraltar. We went into the Gold Coast. We came back out, hit the Canaries, hit Morocco, which is really cool. Then we went down to the Cape Verdes off the coast of Africa, and then we sailed back over to the Caribbean, and just kind of went all up and down the Caribbean. I mean, we had a boat. We might as well just sail to as many islands as we can. Then back to Bermuda and home. And this was all before my first year of college at Old Dominion University. So I basically took a gap year.
Heck yeah, that's amazing. What kind of sailboat did you have?
We had a 51-foot Morgan Out Island. this boat was designed to be sailed in the Caribbean and in the Bahamas, especially in the Bahamas. Like, the centerboard is actually able to move. So you can bring up the centerboard for shallower waters.
Wow.
And bring it back down for deeper waters. I mean, it's a beautiful boat. My parents, you know, we used to have a smaller boat, and then we traded the guy that had the 51. We traded him, and then, you know, paid the difference or whatever. And we got that boat, and it became the family boat. And my dad loves that boat. They still have it. They still sail down to the Caribbean. I'm excited for them to hopefully come this year and come see me on my island.
That's cool. So with the centerboard and having it being kind of specific for shallow water sailing, did it have any problems crossing the Atlantic?
Crossing the Atlantic, no, not specifically. I mean, even with water spouts and everything, I mean, we had water spouts just form off of our bow every now and then. When we got to the Canaries, we had been sailing in, and then our transmission just kind of blows. Something happens. And so now we have to sail this 51-foot Morgan into the marina all by our sails. We just half-masted the mainsail and just kind of coasted in and
just crept in there.
I tell you, it was kind of scary, but you know, we've been on boats all our lives. And even though this had never happened before, it was good to know that we were still prepared to do it together, you know, and a lot of teamwork came in to make it possible for us to coast in there safely, and we didn't damage anything else. So that was just amazing. Wow, we did that.
That's amazing. Yeah, sailing into an anchorage is not a small feat, really.
I did do an independent study for Dr. Bradansky at Old Dominion University, where I would take water samples every day and write down where we are, what time, what's the weather, this, that, and the other. And I would actually filter them in our galley. I had this gimbal, and it was attached to a beaker, and I would filter these water samples, and then I would freeze them. When we got to Portugal, that's when I had to get a dry ice package and send them back to ODU.
That's super cool. So before you started college, you did a independent study where you were actually taking water samples all the way across the ocean.
Yes. The idea
for
was
a professor at Old Dominion. That's so cool. I know you weren't involved in a lot of the analysis, but like, what were they looking for in those samples?
They wanted to basically have an entire transect from the U.S. to Portugal, and just have a transect of plankton, because, you know, it's so expensive to have oceanographic vessels out there as you're trying to get as much data as you can. We just figured it'd be a good opportunity to try and get sample data crossing. That was the goal. Looking at the results, there were some that didn't quite make it, but at least we tried.
That's definitely a tough thing to do. So that's really, really cool that you got to, you know, participate in research like that as you were going. What was your longest transit?
3 weeks from Bermuda to the Azores, I think, was the longest one. And then it was a close second from the Cape Verdes to, I think we landed in Antigua. So I think that was just under 3 weeks.
A really amazing experience that I am definitely jealous of, and I continually think about doing.
I feel very fortunate to be able to have done that. You know, my dad served most of his life in the Army, and so at some point he was like, I want a boat. And so he got a boat, and it's just been our family thing. I might not have been as ecstatic about it when we were leaving, just graduating high school and missing all my friends and being a typical teenager, but halfway through, I'm like, oh, snap, this is amazing, and I'm going to enjoy it. And it's something that I'll always cherish, you know, I'll always remember this trip. I'm probably never going to have a trip like that ever again in my life, but I'm really thankful that my parents decided that was something that they wanted us as a family to do. And it brought us closer. Nobody was thrown overboard. We all still talk to each other. It was a success. I mean, it's close quarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50 feet is not really all that far. I've lived in 120 with 25 other people, and at least half of them were asleep when you were awake. So that was kind of nice.
Even living on a tall ship for 3 months is is incredible, you know?
Oh, it is. Awesome. I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. I definitely wish I could go back to it many days. So after your Atlantic crossings, you attended Old Dominion University for your undergrad degree in biological oceanography. And you said you grew up in Virginia. Is Old Dominion close to where you grew up?
Yeah, I wasn't far. It was about 30 to 45 minutes from home. I basically was like, why go elsewhere? Like, I think I'm just going to stay here and go to ODU in Norfolk. And that way I'm close to my parents. You know, I have a handy, capable brother. So it's just nice to kind of be close to them. And I basically spent, from the fall of 2006 when I started attending. And then I lived in that area until about 2016.
I did college in kind of a similar way. I'm from Michigan. And even though I knew from an early age that I really wanted to do marine biology, I actually decided to get my undergrad in the state of Michigan at a small college that was only about an hour away from my parents because I just couldn't go that far away from, you know, what I'd known and my family and everything.
We only got so much time, right?
Right.
I'm thinking about like how I'm off, like, you know, following my dreams and my passion, but at least, you know, I still can have those moments with my parents. They're quite, my parents will not like me saying that they're older, but, you know, I just want to appreciate the time that I do get to spend with them and still be able to, you know, go for my passion and for what I want to work towards and, you know, building my life. They understand that, which is great. And I can't wait to see them again. I'll probably see them for Christmas or something, you know.
It's so bittersweet. It is. I mean, so after college, I moved 2,000 miles away and it's now been over 20 years and I've never lived closer than about 1,000 miles. So, it's fantastic to do all these great things, but it can be a hard life in terms of, you know, family and keeping connected to your family. You give me a couple little tidbits about your family structure. Do you want to tell me more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So my father was in the Army. My mother, she was a computer engineer. And my brother and I are both adopted. And he's handy capable. And I am a mixed child. So into my family, I have a Caucasian family. And growing up was interesting, but not in a bad way. It's just now as a grown up, you know, I've noticed little things that I wouldn't have noticed as a kid. I just feel really thankful to have been adopted into a family. You know, I could have been anywhere. Let's be real. I could have literally been anywhere, but here's two people that desperately wanted a child and they got me and then they said, hey, let's do it again. And then they got my brother who was handy capable and just, they're like, you know what? That doesn't even matter. Like, let's take him in. Like, love these two children. And I love that. And my parents are amazing individuals. So smart. And I don't know. They just have helped fuel the fire for me to become a fisheries biologist. You know, they've given me opportunities that not everybody gets. I feel extremely lucky to have been adopted to an amazing family. And on top of that, when I turned 21, I decided to go on Facebook and see if I can find my birth mom. And I did. And then I pursued that avenue. And now I have two amazing families. I got really, really lucky in this lot of life. I try to see the good in life. Like, I know that bad things are always going to be happening, but I want to appreciate life in general. Like, I want to be happy that I'm alive. I want to be happy that I can see mangoes out this window in my house right now, you know, off the tree. I want to appreciate what I've been given.
So after you graduated from Old Dominion, you worked in fisheries in a number of different seasonal jobs in various places, including Maryland, North Carolina, and Michigan, I noticed. What was your favorite part of the work that you did in these jobs?
For sure, the field work. I just liked being out in the field working with fishes, different types of fishes, all types of fishes. Like, it didn't even matter. If I was on a boat or in the water or trucking through the woods to get to a stream, I was happy. Like, it did not matter about anything else. I remember when I worked in North Carolina, you know, I still live in Hampton, Virginia. So I had a 3-hour commute every single day, but it didn't matter. We would have like 12-hour days. It didn't matter because as soon as I hit work, I was happy. I was the happiest person. You couldn't tear me down. Everything else just kind of fell to the wayside. If I'm working in fisheries, I'm happy.
Can you tell me about some of the different sampling that you did for the fisheries agencies?
Sure can. Yeah. Well, for Annapolis and for North Carolina, it was mostly typical fisheries work where we're working with gill nets, seining, trawling, things like that, where, I mean, I'd be making gill nets during the off season, you know, that's a typical fisheries work. And then in Michigan, it wasn't coming from a place of working to increase the population of a species or working to conserve a specific species. In Michigan, it was more about the management of an invasive species. Up in Michigan, it's a sea lamprey. And so we worked going through forests and like trucking through all this like backwoods areas to get to these streams where we would treat the streams to kill the amethysts, which are the babies of the sea lamprey, so that they wouldn't grow and go out into the lakes where they would feed on millions of pounds of fish. I mean, one sea lamprey can eat 40 pounds of fish in a year and a half. And if you have millions of them, 40 million pounds, like that's a lot of fish. So it was just a different type of fisheries management. It wasn't about conservation of a specific species where like in North Carolina, it was the alewife and blueback, like there's a moratorium on them. How do we do work to help improve the species' their population? How do we get the population back up? Same with Annapolis. It's the American shad. How do we get the American shad population back up? So now I'm here in the Virgin Islands where it's made, you know, it's working with the two biggest fisheries and, you know, making sure that they don't get overfished, making sure that people are fishing responsibly.
So after working seasonally for several years, you returned to school for a master's degree at the University of Florida. What made you decide to return to school and what made you decide to go to UF?
I decided to go back to school because I was at my job in Michigan with the Fish and Wildlife Service and they were constantly challenging us. They wanted us to grow. They wanted us to be hungry for more information and to understand the big picture and this, that, and the other. And that's what I am. I'm very, like, I want to know more. And so about my third year in, I decided, you know, I'm going to apply to University of Florida. Let's see what happens. Now, mind you, I'm not going to Florida. Like, I want to keep working. Again, nothing makes me happier than working. So I applied for their online program. I applied to University of Florida because, one, they are extremely prestigious school. Two, their online program was amazing. It's part of the School of Conservation Resources. I decided to give it a try. I got in, which was amazing to me. I could not believe it. And then I proceeded to take my online courses. So over a course of about a year and 4 months, I completed my master's program because on our off season from my job in Michigan, I mean, we have 6 months off. So I just super loaded all my classes and there I was. I learned a lot and it was really exciting because they had all these ideas and all these concepts that I hadn't really thought about. But having real life experience in the field allowed me to just be on a whole nother level when I was doing the program. Like I was like, oh wow, I could take this and relate that to what I've been doing here. Or, oh wow, like for the American shad, you know, fishery back in Annapolis, maybe they should try something like this. So I had like all these ideas flowing and I was just excited. And like, I can use all of these different concepts and ideas to maybe make some program somewhere better or try something new or just like have another innovative idea. And it just got me even more excited to keep working in this field.
I definitely agree with you that I've had a lot of really good luck returning to graduate degrees after some time doing other things and being in the field. So I worked for about 4 years in between my bachelor's and master's, and then I worked for close to 9 years in between my master's degree and my PhD. So I had all this experience in the world and in the field of fisheries and in my region. I think it's just a really good way to, you know, to be able to organize and really relate to the material that you're getting within a degree program.
Absolutely. I mean, easier to understand something when you can relate it to something that you're doing or have done. When I graduated ODU, I was like, nah, I'm never ever getting a graduate degree. I just want to go work. From working in fisheries, it made me want to go get a graduate degree. I was dead set on not getting it. And then I was like, JK, I actually want to do this. I want to learn more. I want to know what's going on today in this field, like what's going on with concepts and understanding and this, that, and the other. And I think that's something important for people that are coming out of an undergraduate degree. You don't always have to go straight into a master's, you know, like maybe take that little bit of time and go experience the field, especially make sure that you actually want to do it. The only way to find that out is to be in it, is to experience it, to find what you do and don't like.
What do you think is your favorite thing to do? We've talked a lot about work. We keep talking about work. We keep coming back to work. What do you think is your favorite thing to do outside of work?
I like to walk around the island. I mean, in different places. I like to hike. I obviously like to swim. Definitely should have been a mermaid. I like to spend time with people when we're able to. I like hanging out on my porch, just watching people drive back and forth or feel the wind, watch the iguanas like run after each other. I still have so much to learn about this island, so much to find out and to experience. Right now, it's just exploring. Exploring is my favorite thing to do right now.
So if you were hanging out there on that porch with friends and you were about to start a story with, no shit, there I was, what would be the number one story you'd be telling?
This would be the story. It's like, no shit, there I was. It was dark as heck. Like, there are no lights. I'm in the middle of some person's, like, property at my last job. And I hear this scream, like a woman screaming. And now I'm freaked out. I can't be here. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning, pitch black, and someone's screaming. Nope. So I'm getting into my truck. I'm staying in my truck. I'm looking out the windows. I'm like, I've got my little headlamp, trying to see out the windows. And then I would basically have to get out of this truck to go get the gear, because now it's time for me to stop treating this little river this little creek that I'm on. So now I'm tiptoeing through the forest, trying to make sure there's no sounds, nothing's approaching me. I mean, it's still pitch black. I am scared. I'm scared. So I kind of tiptoe really quickly, go pick up all my gear, and then I quickly put it back in the truck. And then I'm like, I'm out of here. Turn on the truck. Peace out. I heard the scream one more time. And I was like, I'm done. I am done. No way. I am doing it. That was scary. That was scary. I would have to say that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I think I would be freaking out too.
I was like, yo, I can't do this. Like, I gotta go. I can't.
If money were not an object, what's one project you think you would love to conduct in the future? I know you're talking about how all of your coursework really made you think a lot about all the different possibilities. And what's one project you'd love to be involved in?
This was a hard question for me because there are so many things that I want to do with my life. And if money wasn't an object, I wouldn't necessarily want to do a project in fisheries. I would prefer to spend that money to creating an institution or a program that allows people to get their, you know, their experience in this field, especially people of color. Like, this is a people of color. Like, I want people of color to come into this field and to understand what it is and to enjoy it. And if money was not an option, I'd love to create some sort of system that would allow them to do that. And pay them too. It's a scholarship, you know, like a you actually get paid. I don't mess with these non-paid internships. I hate that stuff. Like, I want them to be paid, be able to pay their bills and still get to enjoy life in fisheries. I want them to be excited about it. So it wouldn't necessarily be a project, but more of a community thing.
I definitely agree. I mean, I think that we're finally waking up to that there really is a inconsistency in who has access to a lot of these different fields, especially outdoor fields. It's going to be better for everyone the more people that we can include. We need the enthusiasm.
Honestly, I've been the only person of color in so many offices that I want my brothers and sisters to be like in it. I want them to see like how amazing this is. Now, granted, I have been afforded more privilege in the way that I had a family that could support me in my field, in my passion. But that's the thing, like, that's why I would want an institution that would be able to support these people to be able to come in to this field, because not everyone can have that backing support, like financially.
And not only financially, but also culturally, is that fair?
Yes.
You know, a lot of our families look at us like, what the hell is your problem? Why do you want to do this again? You know, and yeah. If there is a good community out there for everybody who wants to, then it's easier for people to be involved.
We're not going to get paid the best, but you know what? We're going to enjoy it while we're out here. And I just want people to enjoy what they do, just like I do. But they got to be exposed to it first.
Now the tough part of the interview is over, and it's time for my final three questions. Among others, Milton Love, who's a marine biologist, once said that you should have a tattoo of your study species on your body. Do you have any fish tattoos?
I do have a lot of tattoos, but a fish is not one of them. I don't have to get a tattoo of a fish because my birthmark is literally in the shape of a fish. This is how I know I was put on this earth to be in fisheries.
What is your dream job or location?
You know, I never really thought about dream job or location for the longest time, just because, again, I was happy wherever I was, as long as I was doing fisheries, I was happy. But I have to say, this is being here on an island with crystal clear blue waters and being able to dive for work. This is taking the cake. I'll have to say that. This is now my like favorite place, even though sometimes I really do miss Michigan. I mean, I loved Michigan. It was beautiful. But this place, I'm living the dream here for sure.
And finally, if there was one point or principle you would have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
We all have great ideas. We all have great perspectives, and we all are working towards the same goal. And I think a lot of the times we get stuck with not sharing data or not sharing like information because like certain people want to have their credit. I think we should continue sharing. We're all fighting for the same things when it comes to our marine resources. And I think we should all just continue to like think about that and to really work together and just be open. I want everyone to make sure that they have an open mind and want to progress by hearing different perspectives. Like, that's how we're going to be better. That's how we're going to be successful, sharing information and having open minds.
Christina, thank you so much for chatting with me. If people want to connect with you online, where could they find you?
Send me an email at oceanlover2105@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram. My tag is Kirby, Curby, 2105.
Thank you to everyone for listening to the 78th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at FishVecchio. The podcast is Fisheries Pod. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Or old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget to head on over to our Patreon page and support the show if you feel so inclined. I'm Julie Vecchio. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, work together and have an open mind. Thank you. love it. I mean, you know, people can have different attitudes about things, and I love your just like super enthusiastic and positive attitude about so many different things.